Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. As we greet July, we roll into a new fiscal year in the state. Joining us today for a conversation about taxes and budgets, we welcome South Dakota's Lieutenant Governor Matt Michaels. Welcome, sir.
Oh, always good to hear your voice. I think that as modest as you are, though, we need you to be interviewed by me on what we need to do on the Korean Peninsula because of all your expertise there, but hopefully you're keeping your language skills up.
We could start talking about that and spend the entire segment right there. I do, as a matter of fact, have some ideas, Lieutenant Governor.
I bet you do, thankfully.
Best I keep them to myself. How was your 4th of July weekend, sir?
You know, it's an amazing time that we're free, and you and I have lived in other countries where that doesn't exist, so it's pretty amazing, and all the parades and everything, and the fireworks is pretty exciting.
So, I got to drive.
Thankfully, most people were safe, and even though it was dry, poor Rapid City, though, all their fire calls. So we've got to be careful out there, people.
I spent the weekend in Custer and drove home last night, and it was such a pleasure as it got dark to sort of see all the small towns shooting off their fireworks the whole way home. It made me happy to be in the state. So let's talk about the state. Let's talk about the fiscal challenges and highlights and opportunities here as we look at the new fiscal year. Is there anything that jumps to mind first as sort of challenges to the state's financial picture as we look at the future?
Well, I think the main thing that I am really proud of in our state is collectively how we've worked together, and the individuals who evaluate states have said that we're one of the best 12 in the nation by AAA status. And a lot of that has to do with the predictability of how we run our state with our legislators and the way that we're required to have constitutionally a balanced budget and to have it done at a specific time. As you've covered, and I think people pay attention to, we have so many other states that have economic issues that they can't resolve, and they just keep kicking the can down the road, whether it's the New Jerseys or the Illinois or Californias, and they just continue to extend it. Now, we're all human, so one of the things is we work on deadlines, and the way our deadlines are set is we have to be out of peer by a certain period, and you can't have extensions. And that's different than a number of other states. So, one, we get it done. Candidly, we all have to cram for an exam. Two, we're obviously always analyzing our revenue picture and what it is that the demands of the people are for those funds to serve governmental purposes. And then three, to continue to assess it as it relates to long-term health, even with economic downturns. So I think people who wouldn't pay attention to this would be surprised, but July 1 is the beginning of a new fiscal year. A lot of us operate on a calendar year because we do our taxes on a calendar basis. But for state governments, we're all a July 1. Federal government's a whole different story, which would take about a five-hour conversation.
So the New York Times did a piece over the weekend about state governments who were having those challenges, and many of them had a strong, the governor was from the same political party that the lawmakers were, and they were still having problems. So in our state, it's not necessarily just that we have a supermajority in the state house and then also a Republican governor. It goes deeper than that.
It does. I mean, I think that, first of all, goes to the fact that we're able to keep track of our revenues and we don't overspend. And when the governor and I came into office, we had, you know, just been coming out of the recession, but we were in a situation where we potentially were overpromising and we needed to cut. And if we go to our neighbor in the West, Wyoming, they immediately came out of the gate and said, because of the downturn in the coal severance taxes, we're going to cut everybody 22%. When we cut 10%, that was horrendous enough for people to absorb. But the fact is that we've got to manage within how much income we have, and that's how we've been raised, and that's what our Constitution requires, and that's now what the rating agencies have said that we've got to live within. So
let's talk about, sort of South Dakota taxes for dummies. Tell us where the money comes from, how the tax structure sort of works, and then we'll talk about where it goes. Where are we collecting from?
Well, first of all, I'm glad that you asked those questions, because a lot of people don't and assume, you know, that it's significantly different than your home or the business life that a lot of us are involved in. It's really not. I mean, the numbers get bigger, but I can tell Lori's or Matt's priorities by looking at our bank statements. We can see where our incomes are coming from, and I need to have a home. I like air conditioning, so I'm paying electricity right now, and got gasoline and a car payment. So you've got all of that matching up. So it really isn't any different. And how I explain it is that we have a budget of $3.6 billion. So that's hard to get your head around. So I say it's $36. So if my wife Karen and I were sitting around the table, I'd say, honey, we have $36 of income. Of that $36, 16 of it is produced by activity here that we're working, and that's in South Dakota sales tax. So about 62% of that, or you know, close to $10 of that, is sales tax.
Okay.
Number of other states that you're seeing are having problems, that's coming from income tax. And you see high highs when there's good revenues, but then they crash, like the issues in New Jersey and Illinois. But we also have income from lottery and from insurance and bank taxes and alcohol and tobacco and contractors, excise tax, which is for constructing things. And that's what really makes up our $16. Mm. But the vast majority of it is our sales and use tax. And what we see there is some pressure that, if I continue to use my family example, that we're just not making as much money because people are not spending as much for a lot of reasons. There's some online things, and we negotiated a deal with Amazon, but there are still a lot of other purchases that people make that we don't capture that. But we're just seeing a new normal, as they say in the seminars these days, where people aren't spending as much, and some of it's tied to the agricultural economy, but we're just not seeing the growth we have over the years. And so that's why the current budget that we're just starting is really almost a zero growth budget over the prior year.
How challenging is it to predict that sales tax, what those revenues are going to be? Because you're basically predicting what people are going to spend. You're predicting human behavior.
It's very challenging. And in fact, when you say a budget, it's really, an estimate.
Mm-hmm.
And those estimates are continuing to be reevaluated. And a year ago, we were way off, and so we had to recalculate during the legislative session what we could handle. And we'll be doing that again.
Sure.
But the one thing that is pretty important is, out of that $36, going back to that analogy, 16 of that is, you know, revenues that we're making ourselves within the state. We get over almost $12 from federal government, or $1.2 billion for federal government contributions to programs. So it's pretty hefty.
Right.
And then the other $8 or $800 million is from what you did. You went to Custer State Park, so you bought a tag to go in there, a park license,
right,
or somebody went fishing this weekend, or somebody today is filing a lawsuit. It's money for services, or, you know, user fees. But then we say, okay, well, out of all of that money, what is it that we spend it on? And our priorities are really, really simple, and they're hard to adjust because of the demands that we have. And close to 35% of it's taking care of our schools.
Hmm.
And that's, you know, close to $600 million right off of the top. And that includes, thankfully, the sales tax increase that we had a year and a half ago, which we wouldn't have been able to get done this year.
Sure.
At all, because of the economic situation. So timing was everything there, and the courage of the legislators and the people who supported that education increase It's very, very valuable, and we've seen less openings, by the way, coming into the fall of individuals who have retired, and we're just seeing a nice migration in of people who want to teach or stay here teaching. Right there where you're at, the university, we spend about 13% for the Board of Regents system, so that's about $208 million. And then Health and Human Services is almost identical to what we contribute of the people's money to schools. And so Health and Human Services is taking care of people who are in need, the poor, people at the Human Services Center that have behavioral illnesses, people at in our communities that are being cared for by adjustment training centers with developmental disabilities, and people up in Redfield who are at the Redfield State Facility, and those individuals at our community behavioral health centers. So all of that really chews up three quarters of our budget. I think it would surprise people that really our prison system uses 6% of our budget.
Right.
And our judicial system uses only about 3%. So I've been throwing a lot of numbers out there, but I will tell you that these shares, just like in our homes, are relatively static. You know, in your home, you need to pay for, you know, the cost of living.
Right.
And essentially, this is what the people have demanded. And from my first day in the legislature, it's been very similar.
And we can put a link up on our website so folks can see these numbers through the South Dakota state website as well. When you look at that in a pie chart, Lieutenant Governor, then we're definitely heavily invested in our schools over building jails, for example. So the old adage or maybe cliche about building more schools than jails certainly applies in our state, if you look at the pie chart anyway.
Well, and I'm glad that that you're going to post that, because it's something that I use when people are interested in. Lately, they have been, so I've been teaching off of it, and it's just as good as you are, and I'm attempting to be, to describe things orally. When you see this visually, I think it helps.
Right. So let's talk about that $12 or $1.2 billion, as it were, from the federal government. And where's that money flowing into?
Most of that is our matches for taking care of the poor under Medicaid.
Okay.
And then there's also for various programs like I have responsibility for the military. So we have a lot of federal money that comes directly to the state for our jets and our support infrastructure and personnel, helicopters, et cetera, and all of that equipment. So we get, you know, those kind of what I would call federal programs. We obviously get federal gas tax for roads and all those sort of initiatives. And then federal money for programs like assistance to needy families and programmatic funds that come in for jail services and corrections systems. So a lot of that comes in. I think that one of the things that is very, very difficult for the governor and I, especially in light of what you've covered in providing care for the poor in Medicaid, is we do provide about a fourth of our Medicaid budget, about $100 million, to care for individuals that the federal government should be caring for at 100%, and that's through the Indian Health Service. That's a whole other topic, but it's the number one priority of the governor and I and our congressional delegation to at least get those funds, you know, realigned. With all that being said, I said $3.6 billion, and you and I have been in the military. We are intertwined as a nation with our federal government. And so in the military, we're involved in, you know, federal budgets, et cetera. $3.6 billion is the daily deficit our federal government has. So I'm going to put this in a different way. The federal government spending overspends our state annual budget on a daily basis. Hmm. So we are very, very cautious and cognizant of the fact that we are just a budget spec. We're not even budget dust. We're like a neutrino.
Budget neutrino.
We're subatomic particles.
So give me an idea, how closely then do you watch tax reform conversations in Congress, and how might some of those changes that the Republican Party is currently proposing impact the state of South Dakota? How do those roll down?
Well, since we are a manageable state and we're nimble, we are really blessed to have great communications with our congressional teams. And not only are they friends, but they have been involved in governance, like Governor Rounds. And Christy has obviously been in the legislature, and John understands the inner workings of what our priorities are, having lived here, worked so hard for us. And we're just really blessed that we've got great, great communication. The other thing is the governor's part of a 10 governor work group that was put together by the National Governors Association on the issues of health care reform and tax reform, because they're intertwined. So, for example, when I'm done talking with you, the governor, our team and I are talking for the next hour and a half just about this topic and what's happening in the recess and what we're hearing, and just kind of comparing notes from our respective discussions. So we watch it very carefully. We've got great intel. By the same token, I think the same things that you cover is the same things we understand, and that is, if somebody says they know how this is going to end, they're not telling you the truth. We do not know, but we're ready to react. And that's, as you know from our military experiences, the best battle plan is to make sure that you can always realign it and change it.
Right. The sales tax increase that was designated for teacher pay, you kind of mentioned some of the impact of that already in maybe fewer vacancies or some of those positions being filled more easily. It'll take some time for that to all play out. What about the property tax relief that was tied to that? How does that play out for homeowners?
You know, that's coming. We took part of the agricultural property tax relief to fund the testing lab for animals. But the other is being baked in as we receive it now for these taxes this year that are due next year. So people are seeing that in their taxes that they need to pay for next year. So it's not, a lot of people think that it's a tremendous amount of money, but it's really reducing sometimes the growth locally. And we're seeing that, and the impact on it is very, very good. I would ask our listeners to, you know, and I say this to people who work for us, whether they're in state employ or they work in the cities or they're working for South Dakota Public Broadcasting or they're teachers, that there's an interrelationship here that I need to make a pitch for, and that is, I buy things online, there is no doubt about it, but I buy things online where my sales tax is being collected and I'm paying it and being remitted. So one of the first was iTunes, and I downloaded an album from Mike and the Mechanics the other day because I love Mike Rutherford.
Right.
And there is a sales tax on that goes to my hometown of Yankton and to my state.
Okay.
And we need to be cognizant of that when we're buying those things, that this is the environment we're in. And so if we're supported by, if we're a teacher or we're working in cities that have retirement systems and our retirement system is going well, then we should think about this, that it really is our responsibility to also remit those taxes and to buy from online people, buy at home, preferably buy in your communities. But if you're going to go online, at least we implore you, choose vendors that the sales tax will be charged.
Well, I was at Mitzi's bookstore in Rapid City this weekend. I won't even tell you how much they just got off of me. What a great store. Independent bookstores, there's my plug.
Oh, so, amen. Go for it.
So very briefly, before we let you go, and I know you have another meeting to go into, but let's talk briefly about the race for governor in 2018. As we start hearing from the candidates who are running, what sort of things should we be listening to when we talk about how someone's going to run run the state from a financial perspective? What are those smart questions, without getting into, you know, how they might be answered by individual candidates or what their personal experience might be? But as voters, as citizens, what are we looking for to really suss out how somebody feels about balancing the budget in a way that, you know, keeps things as they are or keeps things in a different direction that someone else who's voting might want them to go?
Well, I've been blessed to get to know you and vice versa. I know this isn't going to surprise you, but I think that any individuals running for office now, that the people that are communicating with them should continue to implore and support a civil discourse, that we are not seeing that on a national level, and that it's very possible, if Lori and I talk for 2 or 3 hours, that you and I are going to agree on a few things and disagree on many. That doesn't mean that Lori isn't a good person and isn't a friend. And that the way we've got to continue to keep people involved, and we do it during our legislature, and I think it surprises a lot of people, especially our interns, that there isn't acrimony, there isn't people pointing fingers and saying bad things. We certainly get tired, but we disagree, and we're not disagreeable. We're citizens, and there are people that are dying for us as we speak to be able to self-govern, and that doesn't mean that we have to be hateful and disrespectful. And that is the one thing that I always ensure, as our son grew up through this process and other people have seen it, that they know that that is not how we should govern. And so I ask people to not support negativity. That doesn't mean that you can't ask hard questions, but to be disrespectful, to use hateful language, to use social media to be antisocial, I just respectfully request that we demand it of people who are running for office, that we treat each other that way and continue to have the respect for individuals, regardless of their beliefs and backgrounds, and try to understand each other. It's the only way we're going to continue to build that out. So to build out our relationships and to trust these individuals who will lead us in the future. As it relates to, I think probably the Navy saying is the biggest sea change that we're going to see, and Dennis and I talk a lot about this, is the changing view of what a state government and a federal government should do. Mm-hmm. What is it that we can do when the federal government essentially will send a block grant? In other words, here's your funds, you deal with it on your own. What is that kind of vision? With that being said, I will finally say, without getting into specifics, find a candidate that you really, really wish to support and get involved. The biggest party in this nation, the largest political party in South Dakota, is the Apathetic Party. Let's get people involved, get in the parades, ask the tough questions, and the world's run by those who show up. And so show up and ask those questions that are important to you. It might be important for a lot of people what we're going to do about the fishing in the Northeast.
Right.
But it's very important to people in the Southwest as to what uranium does. Be parochial. And what I mean by that is get your issue out there.
Lieutenant Governor Matt Michaels, I want to say thank you so much for your time. We look forward to the next time. And we'll put those links up on our website, listen.sdpb.org. Thanks.
Good. Have a great time. Take care.